Welcome to the Virtual Velo Podcast, powered by the Zamunique. We are passionate about cycling and immersed in the virtual cycling community. I'm Chris Schwanker, a freelance cycling journalist, here to lend a voice to the digital athlete and bridge the gap between athlete and avatar. Take a conversational ride with us.
Hello and welcome back to the Virtual Velo Podcast, powered by the Zamunique, your central source for news and insights on all things virtual cycling. I am your host today, Si Bradley, and this is episode 27. As always, I'm joined by co-host Chris Schwanker, a man that needs no introduction, but I'll tell you what, I'll do it anyway. Chris is a freelance journalist, writer, and above all, someone who is also passionate about cycling esports. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really well, Si, and I'm always humbled by the introduction, but you know, I'm certainly passionate about cycling esports, and I really want cycling esports to succeed, right? So I probably use the two words game changer a lot more often than I should, right? I've been accused by my family as being an hyperbolist. I'm like, I'm always exaggerating everything because I'm so passionate about it, but the topic for today, I really think, is going to revolutionize the way that we consume cycling esports and the way that it's presented to the public. I really think it's the next step towards legitimizing the sport. And I'm going to read the topic because it's a mouthful. All right.
Go for it.
Fully customizable user interface functionality support through modding. It's a lot, and I'm going to be the first one to admit that I don't fully understand it. And I'm really looking forward to our guest because I know that he has a full understanding of a lot of things that I don't understand.
All right. So you've given us the brief on what we're going to talk about. I'm as mind boggled as you are. So let me introduce today's guest. It's none other than Dr. George Gilbert, who we did have on the show a few weeks back. That was episode 25. So if you want to go back and take a listen to that show, you can find that on whichever platform you utilize. However, given some of the developments that we've had on the IndieVelo platform, which was built and designed by Dr. George Gilbert, but also, of course, we're now only a few weeks away from the start of the supposed cycling esports season, I guess we can call it, which is becoming the tradition now of being held in the Northern Hemisphere winter months. So welcome back to the show, Dr. George Gilbert. How are we doing?
Very good, thank you. It's good to be back and be able to chat to you again.
Before we go any further, I need to ask you for the tech talk for dummies description of what we're speaking about here, right? What is modding? You know, I never heard of the word until I saw it in print in the announcement that you presented to me. What have you done to make it possible? What is it about the way IndieVelo allows access to data that's different and unique? How do you ensure, you know, privacy and prevent any competitive edge in the way that you're presenting this? And how is it different from the way other virtual platforms handle this sort of information?
Excellent questions. Thank you. Right, let's start the start, shall we? What is modding? Modding is it's literally modifying. It's where you customize something somebody else made so that it looks just how you want it. I think it originally came from cars, actually, with custom paint jobs and shiny new wheels and all that kind of stuff. But in the computer industry, it's about giving the community the ability to change a computer program to be how they want it. So it's supported by pretty much all the biggest games in history, actually, everything from Doom in the 1990s through to Half-Life, Minecraft, and so on. But I guess it's a philosophy, actually. It's about giving people control over how they use a game so they feel ownership and truly belonging that it's their game. And modding gives you that power to make it look however you want it to look. So in terms of that kind of techie side of it, it'd be really easy to dive into a techie talk here, but I'll try my best to rein back on that. But essentially what I've done is made the data that you see when playing IndieVelo available as actual numbers to other computer programs. So for example, if you're riding along at 200 watts, then normally you can obviously see a picture of the number 200 on your screen. But what Indiegogo now does is make that number value 200 available to any other application. They can read it and do what they like with it. And obviously the same goes for all the other numbers that you can see too. So what you can now do is basically whatever you want with that 200 watt value. Maybe you want to draw a dial, maybe a bar, maybe a graph, maybe put it into a spreadsheet, change the font, change the position, size, color. Maybe you don't even want to see it at all and just ignore it. But the key point is, it's not me dictating to you that you must have your power data in the top of the screen and this size and this color. What this is doing is Indiegogo is giving you, the user, that number, so you can do whatever you want with it. You're in control of how you view your data. So the third part of your question was kind of around how's this different from other platforms. And most obviously, no other platform supports this. No other platform supports their community this way, gives that level of control. Clearly, there are things like source that everybody listening to this will no doubt be aware of that do something similar. But they do it by hacking the other applications. They're explicitly against the terms and conditions. You could be banned for using it, or more to the point that the application could just change in a way that stops source from working at any time. And it's been done before, and I'm sure it'll happen again. But also because these other programs work by hacking data that's not meant to be seen, there are also other issues with accessing private data, GDPR, and so on. It's a real legal minefield. But what Indiegogo is doing is making that data freely and easily available, so that it's safe to share. It's only sharing the stuff that is allowed to be shared and nothing else. It's not sharing data that gives a competitive advantage. So that's all kind of maintaining that ethos of a level playing field and completely within the terms of use. I'm actively support people to do it. It's just a completely different approach for how you give people control over their data. And actually it's really quite interesting seeing what people have done with it. And this release has only been out for 5 days? And already people have taken it and started to do things like one person's drawn a bike computer on the screen, and so the data is being showed exactly like a bike computer with all the fonts and layouts of that. Another person's built effectively like a companion app. So they've got something running on a tablet and they can kind of see the power data and heart rate data and press buttons on it to change camera angles and so on. And they've just been able to build a complete companion app within a few days. It's amazing what the community can really do here. And my philosophy is to empower people by giving them that data, by giving them the ability to do amazing things, and let run with it. It's an astonishing community, and I'll help and support them in their creations. I genuinely can't wait to see what awesome ideas they come up with.
So, George, just to be clear, and again, I want to make it really, really simple for people like me who may be listening as well. What we're talking about here is like an open API system that basically would enable a user to pull certain sets of data from that and then mod externally in their own application. It's not about modding the game as such as it looks when you open the game now, in simple terms, but those people who have the skills to be able to do something with the data with the API and pull it out, then, you know, they would build their own application, or how does that work exactly?
So right now, yes, exactly like that. So Indievelo is providing that data out in a format that is easily used by other applications. But that data is restricted to the essentially the UI elements. It's what you see on screen, the numbers. So power data, heart rate data, cadence data, how far you've been, how high you've climbed, how long you've been going. And in a context of an event, then the results at every sprint point, the names of riders, their bib numbers, everything that you would see on screen in a broadcast sense of the word. And explicitly, it is not opening up things like the physics or what have you, so that you can't go and modify the gameplay in that sense.
Yeah, so look, I mean, you mentioned Source there, and obviously Source have gone around about their way of getting the data, which I guess probably happens in a number of other games, you know, all kind of games, not just in the cycling side of things. But essentially, you're just making what people are doing anyway formal and accessible via the right channels, essentially, right?
Yes, in a but it's just so much more than that. So by providing that data easily as well as legally, it means that people can use it in a much wider variety of people can use it in a much wider variety of ways, but still with all those safeguards around access to private data and so on.
The potential implications for this are varied and widespread. There's one in particular that I'm having a really hard time wrapping my head around. And I want to just get your explanation on this, because it's something that's come up. The community has asked the same question. So it's around the functionality as a service provider for other platforms. You state you can now benefit from all the back-end data processing that Indievelo provides, but skinned to look like your own brand. What does that mean? What does it look like? What is the proof of concept? I'm interested to learn how this actually happens in a practical sense.
Yeah, of course. So the Indievelo engine was built to be completely skinnable, absolutely everything. And I really do mean everything. So the bikes, the maps, the roads, the characters, the animations, sounds, everything can be replaced. It's just been designed like that from day one, precisely because this entire project was, as you say, said earlier, is based around trying to raise the standards of cycling esports for all platforms. So right from day one, I didn't want to tie everything in, and built the game in such a way that it was really easy to replace anything within that game. So what I'm doing now with other virtual cycling platforms is we've now got that ability. That this UI piece was the last piece of the puzzle, which means that another platform can immediately gain access to Indievelo's physics and great tactical racing and accuracy and precision and performance verification and all of those things, but it still look like it's their original platform. As I said before, I really do mean look identical to their platform. Every element can be replaced. Obviously, ultimately, it's up to them whether they want to take, you know, years to build their own versions of these kind of Olympic grade features from scratch, or they can just partner with us and get all those benefits for a tiny fraction of the effort.
So just to be really clear then, let's say I'm an event organizer, a global event organizer, and I've got a specific set of courses on one platform that I want to use, but I want to use the physics from
from Indivelo, which I've used. You know, I like, there's no question it's one of the best physics out there for sure. That now becomes a possibility.
Obviously, it would need the cooperation of the other sure. platform. You can't just go and create a Zwift-looking event without
Zwift. You drop that name in, not me.
Permission. But yes, it is technically possible to now do that.
How much resources and how much effort would it take? Like, is it going to take like a developer to have to like create a whole entire skin for like create a new world essentially?
Ultimately, it depends on the other platform and what they are, the amount of cooperation in terms of their assets, so the graphics and animations and maps and so on, exactly what format they're in. But assuming that they're in a sensible standards-based format, which I would hope most graphics are, then you could probably get something up and running within weeks.
Then the next question to ask is the implications for other entities within the virtual cycling landscape. And what I mean by that is national governing bodies, international organizations like the UCI, multi-sport event organizers like the Olympics, the Commonwealth Games, the ability to brand and interact with sponsorship partners. Tell me how you see the potential of this customization working as far as making it, you know, cycling esports more appealing for the international widespread entities that are involved.
You hit the nail on the head when you said the word brand and branding. That is absolutely the biggest thing. Right now, if you use another platform, if you use Zwift or RGT or Woosh or whatever, then you're stuck with their interface, their logos, their color schemes, and so on. So if you're broadcasting it, then it looks like a Zwift or RGT or Woosh event and not like your event. So with the Indivelo technology, now you can completely replace all of the Indivelo branding with your own graphics, your own logos, your own fonts, your own color schemes, and so on. In short, anyone who wants to have an event look like it's actually their event rather than the platform's event, then they can. And when you start looking at holding really big events, you mentioned the Olympics, Commonwealth Games, and so on, then this kind of technology goes from being an amazing thing for organizers to being utterly essential. If you're serious about being at the Olympics, then having this technology isn't optional or nice to have. It's an absolute requirement. As we all know, these kind of big events have their own branding. When you look at, say, the Olympic cycling or the swimming or the horse riding or the archery or whatever else, all the information that the competitors and spectators and broadcasters see is it's all branded in exactly the same way. And for anyone who's ever actually been around backstage at the Olympics, the branding police are famous. Anything that isn't branded in the right way gets covered up by a squad of people roaming around with rolls and rolls of gaffer tape. It's an amazing sight. These big events protect their IP to extraordinary lengths. And the ability to completely remove your own brand and replace it with that of the Olympics or Commonwealth Games or something is an absolute requirement. And as we were talking about before, Indivelo's mission here is to scope out the technology needed to take online cycling to the Olympics. And being able to remove the platform's branding and use somebody else's branding is an absolutely essential part of that.
Well, I know that Psy does a decent amount of streaming. And there are many people who think that just individuals streaming their rides, their races is a really valuable way to get cycling esports in front of the non-cycling esports public. Tell us how valuable it is for like the everyday streamer.
So the bottom line here is that it means that anyone can have professional broadcast quality graphics for their events. You know, when you go and watch the Tour de France and so on, they've got their clear brand. You know, they've got the groups on the road at the top and then the gradient in a little dial at the bottom and the kind of riders' names go in the bottom left-hand corner. Everybody kind of gets that picture. And what this new feature for IndieVelo allows you to do is that. You can now do that for your own races or any other kind of design that you dream up. The way that IndieVelo makes the data available is exactly the way that broadcast software wants it. So anyone who uses streaming software, whether that's OBS or vMix or Singular Live or so on, it's all completely plug and play. The streamers who've tried it so far in the last couple of days have all got it working for them in literally a couple of minutes. It literally just interfaces straight in so that anyone can just have immediately professional level quality broadcast graphics.
No, it really does sound amazing. I mean, I'm not just a streamer, but I'm also thinking, Chris, because I own the Level Velo brand, that, you know, an indoor cycling specific clothing brand. And I'm just thinking commercially, we've been sponsoring a few events on other platforms, but without branding, other than, you know, the branding on the advertising of the event. So for me, it'd be absolutely critical to have the event branding in events, sponsoring, a sprint banner, for example, or something like that. And that sounds like that's going to be possible with this. But Dr. George Gummett, then, just I want to delve a little bit more into your brain there, because there's a lot going on. But what is your vision for IndieVelo and you know, the future? What do you think the future looks like for our sport as we look forward?
That's an excellent question. It's unwritten. And that's really exciting. I think we're at an inflection point in the way that online cycling will happen in the future. I think that up until now, you've got a landscape that is dominated by silos. So you've got a company like Zwift that does things for Zwift in a Zwift way, and you've got a company like RGT that does things in an RGT way, and they don't talk to each other at all. They just do their own thing in their own little way. But if you look at how pretty much any other industry in the world works, but specifically just it real life cycling, then if you look at, say, how the Tour de France is run, then you've got ASO as an organizer, but you have Tissot as the timing provider, or Skoda as a car provider, and so on and so forth. You get specialists in different bits of the technology, and as the race organizer, you pull in those different bits of tech from whoever's the best supplier of it. And so the way I think that online cycling jumps forward is by adopting that model, is by race organizers saying, okay, well, I need to get the physics from here and the timing from there and maybe the roads and maps from there, and maybe I'll do the broadcasting this way and so on. And what IndieVelo is doing is providing really neat packages for each of those sections, and then the market can then go and pick what they like. It's a real inflection point for how the industry will evolve, how we go from a siloed industry to one that is functional in the same way that every other business is, where you get the best quality items from different suppliers and then plug them together.
Well, we certainly have done a pretty good job of explaining the facets of Indie Velo that are very positive and progressive for cycling esports. But there are people out there that may be listening to this and say, you know, that guy really talks a good game. He's making a lot of claims. Is he able to back him up? Is he overplaying his hand? What would you say to those people?
Try it. Bluntly, this isn't kind of vaporware. This isn't, you know, I'm not a PR person spouting stuff to make it sound good. There's a real product here. You can download it, you can ride it, try it, you can stream it. Go ahead, play with it. See what you like. And if there are bits you don't like, then let us know and we'll fix them and make it better. But yeah, as I said, this is a real product. And if you're at all skeptical, try it.
Well, I have to tell you that that's one thing that I've really been impressed by. I've ridden, I guess, over 1,000 miles now, Si, on Indie Velo. You know, about 8 rides.
Yeah, I've seen some of your long rides.
No, only kidding. But I had an issue. I dropped it into Discord, dropped my log file. Dr. Gilbert had it troubleshooted and the bug fixed before I basically got out of the shower, it seemed. We appreciate you coming on with us. I know that you have your hands full and your hands full revolutionizing cycling esports. We appreciate that effort. I'm thoroughly impressed. Anything else that you have for Dr. Gilbert, Si?
No, absolutely. Just thank you very much for joining us. But on that topic, Chris, if anyone does want to read about your experience with your first 3 races in Indie Velo, I know you've just done an article on the Zamunique as well, so go and check that out. But Dr. George Gilbert, thank you for joining us again. Absolutely fantastic to learn a bit more about potentially how we could commercialize this sport even further in the future as well. So I really appreciate you coming on and I hope to see you soon.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, Chris, I'll tell you what, the last couple of weeks has been a lot to unpack from these discussions. And for me, that was really interesting, really exciting, because it's, you know, I think I really feel like the sport is moving forward, you know, because if we're going to be looking at, you know, growing the sport in the future, it's not just about pulling the technical aspects together. It's also about pulling in the commercial side of the business, you know, and that's me with my commercial hat on there. But, you know, we've got some events coming up in the future and there's a lot of hot topics out there. You know, first of all, we've got the UCI Cycling Esports World Championships. I know, again, you're a man with a finger in the pulse, but where are we going with that? You know, have you got anything new? Where are we?
Well, I know for a fact that commercialization and sponsorships and partnerships, financial partnerships, are a big part of what these international organizations are about. The UCI put out that tender for bids for the Esports World Championship quite a while ago now. It's been several months ago. I think I wrote the article in May when it first came out. And I mentioned back then that there was a stipulation in the tender agreement that opened up for commercial entities to be involved. And they've now since pushed back the deadline for announcing who is going to be hosting the Esports Worlds. I had this conversation with a member of the community, and when they were saying that, oh, it's a foregone conclusion, I said, if this decision was an easy one to make, then it would have been made already.
It's interesting you say that as well, because I have been privy to a questionnaire that, for example, that Zwift sent out to some of the elite riders from last year. And one of the statements in there, some of the questions were, if we get Esports World Championships. So, you know, they also not taking it as a given right now.
It's really interesting. And I think that we're going to be getting a decision soon. I have reason to believe that that decision is going to be coming out the first week in August. And I also have reason to believe that there are 3 bidders that they could conceivably actually get the bid. And one of them isn't even a virtual cycling platform. So it's going to be very interesting. That decision is going to be very telling for the future of cycling esports. It's going to be really interesting to see how things go on the elite esports level coming into this season.
Yeah, and I mean, you mentioned credibility there as well. And obviously, organizations like the UCI and the Olympic movement, the Olympic Committee, for example, credibility is a big thing. And I just with that discussion alone that we've had there, being able to pull, you know, potentially the best in class in each one of those technical areas and commercial areas, I would have thought would really improve the credibility of the sport. Because again, I don't want to revisit, but you know, we've had world championships and we've had Olympic events where, you know, parts of that have been questioned, not the credibility of the athletes in the Olympic, but the setup, the bike chase and things like that. So that's really cool. So on the Olympics then, are we where again, are we thinking that whoever wins the UCI Cycling Esports World tender is also going to get the Olympic tender, do we think?
I asked the representatives at the UCI that question, and they were very quick to say that there is no relationship between what we decide and what the IOC decides. We're totally separate in the way that we're looking at this. Whether that's true in reality is certainly something to be debated. But would the UCI want the esports worlds to be fought out on the same virtual roads that the Olympics is going to be contested on? I would think so. But I'm not so sure that either one of those entities are going to have made those decisions in time for each other. The other thing that you have to think about is, you know, using these larger events as models. You know, does our sport need to perhaps be more like traditional cycling in the way that we handle sponsorships and partnerships? And, you know, like, do we need banners lining the virtual roads with advertisements? You know, do we need to go that traditional route? You know, the virtual cycling is such a new entity. And, you know, traditional cycling has its strengths and weaknesses as far as that's concerned. You know, there's certainly a large disparity in gender compensation that I would hope that virtual cycling could solve. But there are other ways that they're very lucrative, and there's a lot of credibility there. Is that the way that we need to go until we have an identity of our own?
Yeah, I think this commercialization of the cycling esports, for me, it has to happen. You know, and I think you're right, we do have to follow some of those traditional elements of, you know, not just cycling, but other sports, you know, of pulling in money from not just national governing bodies from the credibility point of view, but those commercial organizations, the sponsors of different banners, the sponsors of different jerseys of different events. That will grow the sport, that will grow the audience, so, you know, with the next generation, with, you know, in different genders, all aspects of life. I think money will help to drive that. Money is a very powerful thing in sport, and I think we have to move to that, you know, to be able to bring in that commercialization of our sport if we really want to grow. But we can only do that by having the credibility across all aspects of our sport.
I always kind of think, you know, with blinders on, like, we just need to have to create the best legitimate sport, you know, the most engaging sport. But if you really think about it, that's a minor piece of the puzzle, because we could have the best sport in the world, but if nobody is watching it because they don't have access to it, because it's not put in front of your face with sponsorships, if it's not commercialized, then is it really going to get the traction that it needs to sustain itself? And I know that, you know, the purists out there are going to say, does money make it a sport? No, it doesn't, but it makes it a popular sport, you know, a sport that can pay its athletes, which is, you know, a large part of the motivation for a lot of things that I do. Like, I'd love to see these athletes actually get a paying wage and be able to specialize in you know, cycling esports. Wouldn't that be a dream for a lot of the athletes? You know, like Zach, for instance, who we spoke to last week. You know, he's a talent. He's engaging. Why isn't he just being an esports athlete? You know, because of the money. And we need to solve that piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, absolutely. And I say that happens in sport, but it also happens in other games and other esports at the same time. But also, it's probably another topic for another show. And I know we're going to cover this more. We did cover it a little bit in 25, but you mentioned the legitimacy, because we're still without a national governing body in a way of our sport, who's, you know, ZADA, what's ZADA doing now? Does it still exist? Big question mark over there. But, you know, who's going to pick up that piece to legitimize, you know, and make it bulletproof from that point of view? Probably a topic for another show, Chris, but it's certainly something we should be thinking about.
I'm looking forward to that. And actually, I don't think that I even told you in any of the conversations that we have. I have that working on the back burner. So look forward to having an in-depth discussion about legitimizing cycling esports on the international level coming soon.
Yeah, fantastic. And talking about coming soon, we've got a couple of other shows lined up, Chris. The next show, I believe, we are going to be talking about, of course, the Zwift Racing League. We're going to talk, hopefully, to James Barnes over the next week or two as well about his experience at the Olympics, but more importantly, his views on Zwift Play, because is steering going to be enabled in ZRL? Question mark. But also Premier Division, Grand Prix, potentially that's coming up as we approach the indoor season, as we call it, as we get to that part of the year. So plenty to come, as always. So don't forget to like and subscribe on whatever podcast platform you utilize. And also, you can find all shows available on thezamunike.com.
I'd like to thank you for the privilege of your time and for helping to bridge the gap between athlete and avatar.